Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
No, it's more of a Friday morning wake up, isn't it? I'm Tristan Kington. That's my colleague, Chad Duffy.
Hi.
We're Microsoft Premier Field Engineers, and we work a bit with Direct Access. So we thought we'd come here and tell you about some of the improvements in Direct Access for Windows Server 2012. We're going to be looking fundamentally at the simplified configuration for Direct Access. This is the key new feature that makes it much easier to deploy, and it makes it sort of easier to squeeze in as a short-term project before going whole hog and upgrading it with complexity. To talk a little bit about what we do, we work with Microsoft customers to analyze and assess their environments, provide best practice-based improvements where we can, and fix stuff if it's broken. So that's our day job. We're not sales, we're not marketing, and I'm personally a little bit nervous about being up here. Chad's not. Chad's a seasoned pro. So we thought we'd kick off with a demo of the Direct Access experience, as hopefully most of you will be excited enough to go back and do at your places. Chad's just got home from work in our demo. And Chad's throwing his feet up on the couch, he's got his laptop in front of him, he's ready to watch a bit of TV, and he notices that he's got an email from his boss, Roger, executive head. And Roger has, as you do after hours, decided that Chad needs to urgently action something, and he's got to action it using intranet servers. So we can see here we've got some TFS reports or TPS reports on some server, and we want to do something with some intranet site. Ordinarily, this would be Chad's groan point. Yeah, that wasn't a really good groan. And Chad would have to fish out his VPN client or token or whatever other credentials he needs to provide and break his concentration flow in order to fire up a client and then do something on the intranet. Can you do something on the intranet now, Chad?
Yeah, so instead of that, all I'm going to do is click on the email and I'm straight into work without dialing up a VPN or doing anything at all, really. If I wanted sort of a little bit of an indication on what's actually happening, I do have on the network indicator here that there is a direct access connection that is connected. And so all that's happened, we'll talk about how to set this up in a minute, but underneath the covers, it's dialed up an IPsec tunnel and we're tunneling straight back into work without worrying about establishing establishing a VPN and providing credentials and that type of thing first. So that's the file side of it. There's also, we can do the website. It might be our corporate HR website. In this case, they haven't done much work with it, but you can see we're straight back into work.
That's a really aggressive web development schedule and we're working hard on it. We hope to complete sometime next year.
Yeah, maybe we'll move back to the deck.
Cool.
I should have quickly shown just what that looks like as far as IP addresses, just in case we don't get there in a little while.
Yeah, this is the we have nothing up our sleeve part of the demo.
Yeah, so your company executive, you're sitting on the lounge, you're not going to be worried about this type of stuff, but what you're actually looking at here is down the bottom, we've got our home network set up, we're just on a home wireless or whatever it is, but down the bottom we've got an IP HTTPS transport that's being used to connect us back to work, and that's why we're able to browse all the things as if we're still in the office.
We'll talk a lot about IP HTTPS later. It's basically the key reason that Direct Access is so simple in Server 2012. So to recap on what we've just seen, Direct Access lets you be connected to your corporate intranet from wherever you are. Doesn't matter if you're on a hotel network, doesn't matter if you're on a home wireless network. If you've got connectivity to the public internet, you should be able to do Direct Access. There's no visible VPN client under most circumstances. If you want to upgrade that with one-time passwords and authentication, you can, but the simplified configuration is just using user logon credentials and computer account passwords. One of the key things that I wanted to highlight here as a TMG person myself is reverse proxying is not required for Direct Access. You enable access to your intranet, you don't have to do link translation, you don't have to set up alternate access mappings in SharePoint, you don't have to worry about external domain names versus internal domain names, and people sending emails don't have to be cognizant of that either. So that's a key benefit of always-on VPN. The way Direct Access works is it uses a whole bunch of technologies. It's an IPv6 technology fundamentally, and it uses a whole bunch of IP4 to IP6 tunneling technologies and transition technologies in order to get there. The magic of direct access is performed by your domain controllers. They tell the client, here is your direct access configuration, and the direct access client then wanders off onto the internet and accepts, and implements whatever configuration the DC handed it through group policy. It tunnels, so it's an important point worth noting. This is a private network across a public network. It is just like a VPN, it's just lower overhead. Bless you. And the new innovation is the use of the Kerberos proxy. With Windows 7 Direct Access, there are a couple of limitations which we'll talk about in a bit and why it's so much better now. And the Kerberos proxy allows the computer to authenticate using its computer account to a web service basically on the internet, grab a Kerberos token and perform the rest of the encryption and authentication options based on that Kerberos token. So that's awesome.
All right, so Direct Access has been around for quite a while. It was introduced in Server 2008 R2. The problem with it was you needed to have native IPv6 internally, or at least you needed to provide a transition technology of your own. So there were things like NATPT and DNS64 and NAT64 were available, but they weren't provided with the Direct Access product. In between then and Server 2012, we put Direct Access into UAG, and the idea was there that we could actually provide NAT64 and DNS64 with the UAG product and make it possible to deploy Direct Access without having to be native IPv6. Native IPv6 was probably one of the biggest blockers for Direct Access. The other really big one was the fact that we needed two public IP4 addresses to even be able to use Direct Access, and we also needed the Direct Access server to be sitting somewhat on the edge and also being joined to the domain, and that sort of put quite a few customers off. So we'll talk about all that stuff and how we've fixed it, but most of the blockers that were in Server 2008 R2 and even in the UAG product are gone now. The deployment blockers are gone. All right, so this is probably the list or the best list of improvements. It sort of summarises why Direct Access is probably going to be a really good investment for most customers now. Most of the things that you would have turned your nose up at in Server 2008 R2 have been fixed. So the first one I've already mentioned, we can do it without IPv6 natively. Direct Access is still an IPv6 technology. The client thinks it's using IPv6 the whole time, but we can trick it into thinking that you are an IPv6 native using NAT64 and DNS64 now. We also don't need you to deploy a PKI, but that actually depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you need to use Windows 7 clients, you're still going to need a PKI. So if you're talking about the most simple deployment here, it's just Windows 8 and Server 2012. But in that scenario, you don't need a PKI anymore. We have the Kerberos proxy that Tristan mentioned. So we don't need to authenticate computers using certificates. We can actually authenticate them as if they were joined to a normal domain sitting inside your corporate environment. And IP-HTTPS has been fixed up a fair bit as well. In Server 2008 R2, the problem was that we had this IP-HTTPS transport. We had, Direct Access would prefer to be native IPv6. If it couldn't do that, it would use a technology called 6-to-4, and 6-to-4 is used when you have a publicly routable IPv4 address that we can tunnel our IPv6 packets over. If we couldn't do 6-to-4, we'd use Teredo, and Teredo is good when you're behind a NAT device using a private IP address, a 10 or a 192 or whatever it is. But then we had this fallback to IP-HTTPS, and IP-HTTPS was always the ugly fallback. It was sort of the global, if nothing else worked, IP-HTTPS works. It's actually been flipped around. It's the best choice now, and it lets us do a lot of the things that will make Direct Access actually work for most customers in Server 2012. The other thing that we can do, and this is kind of cool if you're interested in trying this out when you get out of here, is we can sit behind a NAT device now. So that means that's very good for corporate, but it's also just good if you want to try this out when you get home. You can take this home, sit it behind your home router, and it'll actually work. And I've set it up on my home router just to sort of get prepared for this type of stuff, and it works fine. When you're using Direct Access behind a NAT, you need to be using IP-HTTPS, but that's fine, especially if you're going to use a Windows 8 client, but even the Windows 7 client can support that transition technology. And the last point there is that we support Server Core. So if you're interested in deploying with Server Core, that's an option as well.
What we're about to demonstrate is the simplified setup for Direct Access 2012. It's pretty much, I'm going to sort of bad mouth the demo, but it's pretty much fill over the bouncing ball, set a couple of options that you need to be aware of, and then profit. So, someone got the reference. The first thing that you do is create group policies with the Direct Access wizard. So in order for the client to understand that Direct Access is an option and how to do it, you need to tell it. And the Direct Access Getting Started wizard creates a group policy and associates that with the clients in the domain. The client, when it's connected to the corporate network, then slurps the group policy from the domain controller. And when you take the client home, or to a cafe, or wherever it is that you want to use your client, it'll then try to contact a server that it thinks is an internal network server. So that's your network location server. If it fails to contact the location server, it knows I'm on the internet now. So it then tries to establish a tunnel to the direct access server IP. Tunnel, connect, and profit. So at that point, we'll be on the Direct Access network.
So rather than just talking about it, we thought we'd show actually setting this up. And the interesting thing about it is if you do it in the simple way that Tristan just described, it's going to take less than 5 minutes for us to have a full Direct Access deployment set up. The one we're looking at here we'll explain some of the limitations of in a second, but basically what we're talking about is a Direct Access setup using only Windows 8 clients. Windows 7 just needs a bit more work, and we'll talk about that bit later in the deck, but this deployment shouldn't take us too long. So this is my Edge server. Just going to jump out to Remote Access Management. And all I've done, I've actually installed the remote access role, and that's just because that takes 5 minutes to install the binaries. There's no configuration at all at that point. You just tick the box and the remote access role is installed. And so when I open this for the first time, I get the Getting Started wizard. And I get this interesting option here to deploy Direct Access and VPN, or just Direct Access or just VPN. The reason I say that's interesting is prior to Server 2012, you actually couldn't deploy a VPN on the same box as Direct Access. They had conflicting IPsec requirements, and putting them on the same box wrecked one of them for you. So we're just going to go with the basics here on Direct Access. This wizard's actually trying to figure out a bit about my network at the moment. It goes through and finds out if I'm behind a NAT device or if I've got native IPv6, and it makes some decisions based on that are going to go into the group policies that will be applied. So this is just the external DNS name, da.contoso.com. For this deployment, I'm going to leave it as an Edge device just for the sake of simplicity, but for most customers, it's going to be single network adapter behind a NAT or something similar. We've done a couple of deployments already so far, and both have been the single Edge behind a NAT type scenario. All right, at this point, you could actually hit finish. But probably if you get nothing else out of this and you are going to try this out, please don't hit finish at this point in your enterprise. And the reason is they've hidden this little click here. It's for something very, very important, link. And you come down into the remote clients bit here, and you've got this checkbox that says enable direct access for mobile computers, which sounds very good. Sounds like a very good idea.
That sounds like a really good idea.
Thank you, Tristan. The reason it's not necessarily a great idea is that that's going to put a WMI query on the group policy that's created, and it's going to push that policy to all computers, all laptop computers in the environment. So what we would prefer that you do is untick that and instead create a group that you want direct access clients to be in. So I've just called it DA computers. So the big difference there is I've got the 10 computers I want to try this on before I go viral with it, rather than using a WMI query that's going to push it to all laptops in the environment before I'm ready to support it. So I just hit next. I'm going to change this little status indicator here to TechEd Workplace Connection just so we can see it. Or I'll just call it TechEd DA so it fits on the screen. And hit finish. There's a lot more configuration we can fiddle with in there, and we'll cover that off later on. But this is just about getting it up and running in 5 minutes. What it's doing now, it's actually creating all the group policies, or actually there's only two group policies. There's one for the server itself, the direct access server, and then there's one that's going to go to the clients based on that security filtering that I chose. So it's putting all the details about whether I've got IPv6 native, whether I'm behind a NAT device, and it's choosing the transport technologies that will be available as well. If I'm not behind a NAT, it knows that I can use Teredo and I can use 6-to-4 and I can use whatever else I would like. But if I'm behind a NAT, I'm going to be stuck with IP/HTTPS. And I shouldn't say stuck. It's actually a really good choice for transport.
So this was where we were going to just sort of hum along while we waited for it.
Yeah.
This is for disadvantaged using video demos. We're doing all this live. So anyone read any good books lately? Chad? No?
Okay. No, not lately.
Awkward pause then. That's okay. Oh, hey, cool.
All right, so that's done. Once it has actually finished, what you wait for here is in the operation status bit, you're shown all the components of Direct Access. Direct Access is really just a fancy name we've given to a whole heap of stuff that's already in Windows. IP6, IPsec, IP/HTTPS, all technologies that are in Windows, but this is adding a wrapper and a GUI around them and calling it Direct Access. When I refresh this, it'll probably take close to 60 seconds before it's ready to go, and that's just the server applying all the policies that I've just put in. While I'm waiting for that, I'll jump on the client over here that's connected to the corporate network. And what I should see underneath corp.contoso.here, for any Direct Access client, I should see a status indicator from this point. The group policy deploys that. So because that's taking a little while, we'll just do a quick GP update.
You're not going to force it, Chad?
Not this time, Tristan.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Chad.
We'll refresh this one. So that's very close to going. Server's ready to go, I should say, not very close. That means we've got 6-to-4 ready, we've got DNS, IP/HTTPS. All the components of the services have been started and the configuration's been pulled out of group policy. With the GP update, that probably looks pretty drastic, but I find that often the first time you do the GP update, because you're modifying the way that this client does name resolution and a whole lot of other things, I find that usually it just takes 2 GP updates and you're good to go. There's probably a really good technical reason for that, but I think it is down to the way that we're messing with the name resolution while we're trying to update group policy. And there we go. So I should have here now a TechEd DA connection, and I don't know how easy that is to see, but it just says that it's connected locally or through a VPN at this point. So what I'll do, I'll put that out on the internet. So all I've done, I've taken a client from the corporate network down to McDonald's or wherever I get free wireless and just connect it to the wireless connection. And so what we should see here is that the client should figure out that it's out on the internet in a second. And as soon as it figures out that it can't touch the network location server, that internal server that it's always looking for when it changes networks, it should start establishing an IPsec tunnel and tunneling its way back to work. So you can see there it's now connected, TechEd DA is connected, and it's even beat the little network thing that figures out whether I'm on the internet or whether I'm still at work and that sort of stuff. So DA has won that race. What I should be able to do now is open up any corporate resource. So I'll just grab the web server. Oh, there we go.
Just a note on that little dialog box that you saw pop up then. With Windows 8, that's fundamentally how you choose whether a network is friendly or unfriendly. So most of the time, if you're asked if you want to do sharing on this network, the answer should be no. If it's a special network like workplace or home, that's when you should say yes to that.
All right, so I've just got here some files. Same files that we were looking at before, and I can open any of those as if I was still in the office.
You have the most important document server.
I do, and web server. And the other thing that you get with Direct Access, something that often gets overlooked, is the ability to manage out. So not only can I reach back into work, but work can reach out and manage this client as well. Probably the most simple way to show that is if I go to the DC, I can jump straight into the sysfile share and have a look at where the group policies are actually being pulled from, and it's as if I was still in the office, essentially.
So the client uses the Kerberos proxy to pull a token and then can use that token to query information from Active Directory just as if it were on the corporate network.
Yeah. And so the other cool thing that we've got in Server 2012 is the ability to see the clients as they're coming in real time. You can see there I've got Corp 1 Administrator logged on to Client 1 using IP HTTPS, and down the bottom here I actually see a list of the ports and services that are being used on the network. So you've got, you can spot the Kerberos authentication there on 88, the SMB transfer for group policy being pulled on 445, the web server, DNS. All of those things are going to show up in the console per client as you're going through, and you'll get a little bit more detail in here as well. We'll cover that in a little while though.
So that's it. We've got a direct access client configured. We've got the server set up. That was probably under 5 minutes.
I'd say so.
Let's all go home. No. We're going to talk to you about how that works now in a bit more technical detail. So in this simplified deployment, we used Windows 8 clients because for the simplified deployment mode, you have to. Windows 7 clients still need certificates. So if you're prepared to, or if you've already provisioned certificates for your Windows 7 clients, they can still participate within a simplified deployment. It's just a little bit more tick-boxy. IP-HTTPS is used as the only client-side transition technology. It's NAT-friendly, firewall-friendly. You can use it pretty much anywhere. And the client, Windows 8 client, natively tries that first, so it's a good option. You can scale it with NLB from inside the remote access console, and you can add either PKI if you want to go to a stronger level of authentication than just Kerberos with machine passwords, and one-time passwords later. I should get a clicker. Over to you.
All right, so this slide's really quick. It's just to introduce or to remind the fact that it is an IP6-only technology, direct access. Everything that we saw there in the demo was actually IP6 under the covers, even though we haven't deployed any IPv6 in that demo environment. What it's actually doing, it's the client is always assuming that, or the client is IPv6, and it's always assuming that the answers coming back to it are IPv6 as well. So the transition technology that's letting that happen is called NAT64/DNS64, actually two technologies, but we talk about them together. And NAT64 is that NATing of an IPv4 address to an IP6 address, and obviously DNS64 is the name resolution part. We've got sort of a deep dive slide that we'll talk about that shortly. It'll just show the way that that flows. But that's sort of one of the more important things to think about when you're considering deploying direct access, because while it's very easy to set up, you're still going to need to troubleshoot this thing if something goes wrong, and it's all going to be based on IP6 troubleshooting tools.
The older version of direct access had two auth IP policies implemented with certificate-based authentication exclusively. That was its default mode of operation. And using the Kerberos proxy that we mentioned earlier, we can overcome that limitation so that clients don't actually need to create a complete certificate-based authentication chain in order to complete direct access connectivity. The client authentication requests simply get pumped through to a web service. The client's told about this by the direct access policy, so it knows to do this. And the Kerb proxy sends the Kerb ticket requests to DCs and then translates that back into web speak for the web service client. Thank you. The GSW configures the KDC proxy for you, so it's pretty much a no-config service. If you have a look at your HTTP.sys configuration later on, you'll see that there's an IP-HTTPS listener registered in there and there's a service host process attached to it. You don't need to worry about it. It has no real moving parts that are user-configurable. Because of the single IPv4 address requirement now, as opposed to the double IPv4 double consecutive IPv4 address requirement, NAT is simple and straightforward and supported with the IP-HTTPS listener. You do still need a server authentication certificate, but they're pretty easy to come by. And whatever certificate you use will be supported by the client because the direct access wizard takes whatever certificate you pointed at, blobs it up, and puts it into group policy, so any client receiving that policy will trust the certificate on that DA server. By default, it uses a self-signed cert, so you don't have to worry about the certificate implications or buying one from VeriSign or any of that stuff.
Probably the only thing I'd say about the support for NAT, I think we've done it to death, but just keep in mind that the direct access wizard is going to know that you're using NAT, so there's nothing you'll actually have to do. It'll do a probe when you're trying to install it and figure out whether it needs or whether it's going through NATing on the way out. So it's actually really easy to set up. The Probably as far as deployment blockers go, the really big one to talk about is that we no longer need those external public IPv4 addresses. In the past, you actually had to have two public routable external IPv4 addresses. You had to assign them to the DA box, but you also had to have the DA box on the edge somewhat and making sure that it was receiving the traffic on those ports untouched. It also had to be joined to the domain, and that's probably where we lost a bucket load of potential direct access installations. All right, we mentioned before that IP-HTTPS has been improved. If I had to give the short version of how we did that, the main thing that we've done is that we've taken away the double encryption. What used to happen is you've got an IPsec tunnel being established that's encrypted anyway, and then what we did is used IP-HTTPS as a transport, which is also encrypted. So encrypting everything twice made direct access a little bit clumsy using IP-HTTPS in the Windows 7 client. In Windows 8, that doesn't happen anymore. We stand up the IPsec tunnel, and then we turn off the encryption on the SSL part of it. So it's encrypted inside IPsec rather than being encrypted twice with SSL. It's now also the preferred transport. So I mentioned before, there are sort of four transition technologies in the Windows client, but IP-HTTPS used to be the last choice. It's now actually the best choice in Windows 8.
With Windows 7 Direct Access, you might also have mentioned, noticed that it doesn't play nicely with authenticating proxies as a client. Windows 8 improves that situation a lot by having a whole bunch of client changes so it can actually show you a user interface if your proxy needs credentials now.
All right, so this is just another really interesting part of what we've done with this Direct Access revision. This dejoin utility was introduced in Server 2008 R2, and you might have seen it. What it gave us the ability to do is join computers to the domain without actually ever touching the domain. So we take all the stuff, you do your normal right-click my computer, join computer to domain. We take all the stuff that flies over the wire there, the computer password, computer name, domain controller name, all those things, and bundled them up into a blob, and then we could inject those blobs into computers that had never touched the domain, and they'd be connected to the domain when they eventually did come into work. The benefit there was when you're doing a big deployment, you could have these blobs injected and just sit them on the end desk rather than ever bringing them into an IT lab or whatever, however your deployments usually work. So we took that blob approach and actually applied it to direct access. And what that means is, apart from just taking the stuff that's used to join to the domain and then sending the computer on its way, we now stick all the direct access policy inside the blob as well. So what happens is when you collect a blob, and we'll do this in a demo in a second, and then apply it to a machine that's never seen the corporate environment, it actually never needs to see the corporate environment. You don't have to take it into work at all. You'll be injecting direct access into it as well. So when you try to log on, the IPsec tunnel's going to get established to work. You're going to be on the corporate network, even though you've never seen the corporate network. You could buy a PC from your local computer shop, inject the blob, and you're on the corporate network even without ever being there.
So while you get set up with that, I'll introduce it. Here's the scenario. An important company executive, let's call him Roger Executive Head again, has spilled coffee on his laptop or dropped it in the bath or something like that. He's miles from the nearest remote corporate office, so he's not going to be able to get into the office to do the work that he needs to do for his presentation tomorrow. There's a possible solution to this involving dejoin, which means that the administrator can create an offline joining package, send that somehow to the executive, and have him remotely join a brand new laptop that he's just slapped down his black Amex for to the domain. He can get to all the files he needs to access, and he'll be able to win at the presentation the next day.
All right, so what we're looking at here is the domain controller, and I've got a client here called Client 2 that's just the laptop that he's gone and bought from the local computer shop. I'll just quickly show you it's not joined to the domain while I'm waiting on something in the background there. So it's just in a work group. All right, so I jump on the DC. I'm the support guy. I've got the call from the exec, and he's very sad. He says, you know, need to get my presentation, have to get it downloaded, that sort of thing. This dejoin process is actually pretty simple, but I've put it in a script just so I don't make a meal of it in front of you all. This looks more complicated than it is. What I've got here is dejoin. I'm telling it to provision, telling it the computer name, and then also telling it the domain and the policy that I need injected into that blob. The other thing I'm doing is saying if there's any certificates associated with this policy, I want those as well, and I'm telling it where to save it. This rem here is just so I don't hit next and forget to do one extra step that's very important, and I'll show you that in a second. So I'm just going to run that. And you can see here it's successfully provisioned client 3 in the domain corp.
So that's created the computer account at that point?
It has, yeah. So I'll jump on to the AD users and computers. And we should have a client 3 here. Am I in domains and trusts? Wow.
How long have you worked here now?
First day. Client 3. Okay, so this is our new computer. The only thing I need to do here as well as create the blob is also put it in that security group that I created before for the direct access deployment. So I've got DA computers, and I'm just going to add client 3. And this is just so that computer is actually allowed to use direct access rather than... Well, it's a way of actually preventing people of using direct access when they shouldn't be for a start. So client 3 is in there. I'm going to jump over to... Or I'll just copy the blob first, grab the blob. And sorry, they are actually called blobs, by the way. I'm not...
Yeah, they're not just, you know,
yeah,
or anything. Can we have a look at what's in the blob?
We can.
Cool.
This is what a blob looks like.
I shouldn't have angered the demo gods. There we go.
I was going to say, I hope we haven't trashed it.
So, yeah, this is why it's a bit blobby. It's just a base64 encoded set of information. Want me to talk about that a bit?
Maybe, yeah, while I
Let's
jump over
that.
Here.
So this is base64 encoded. It's not encrypted. And one of the things that it's contained within it is the computer account password. So the implication of that is that anybody who gets this blob could join their computer to your domain using this provisioning package. If that's just a little bit scary, that's probably the right level that we're aiming for here. So treat these as if you would treat a user's password. If you wouldn't email a password to a user, don't email these files to the user. Get them FedExed or put them on a secure FTP site or something along those lines. Ha, secure FTP, sorry. Sorry, question? Not to my knowledge. Do we have a use-by date on them?
No. The way that you destroy them effectively is if you delete the computer account from the back end, then it's gone because it's really it is just the computer account credentials, but they don't expire. The tricky thing is with the expiration of those things, and we discussed this sort of back in 2008 R2 because it was a bit scary then as well. Computers change their own passwords. The domain controller never does that for them. So a blob is just a text file that can't really do anything with itself. So from the DC side, we can only change its password once it's injected into an actual computer that has a netlog on service and can actually do that password change. But the short answer, sorry, is no, it doesn't expire. Any computer, that's just going to inject the name client 3 into that computer. Yep, so whatever name we give that, it's going to put on that computer. Actually, my client's called client 2, so it's not even lined up.
But it's only used
once, right? Once, yep. Once it comes in and it creates a secure channel with that client, it's all over for that blob. But the blob lives forever if you don't use it, so you could find one on the street that someone's dropped a year ago and it'll still work.
Yes.
Does this establish a connection before you actually log in?
Good question. Yes, it does. For the computer account.
For the computer account, yes.
Yeah.
And then log in as the user, as though on the domain.
Yep. That's our demo. Don't jump ahead on the demo.
But
yes, there's a surprise ending, which is maybe that the user might be able to log in as if they were on the domain. No. So the initial run of the script is, or the original, sorry, the initial run of dejoin happens somewhere within your corporate network because it needs to talk to a domain controller and it needs to set stuff up and you've got to be a domain admin to do it or at least delegated permissions to do it. And it also slurps whatever group policy object you tell it to slurp and puts it into that blob.
Okay.
So that's how we're sort of pre-provisioning the client for direct access based on group policy settings that the client otherwise would have a chicken and egg problem with. But because they're getting the settings at the same time as their computer account password and all the other credentials that they need, they can hook up and pull the rest of what they need after that. I'm sorry, that's a really good idea. The question was, I can't remember the question now, sorry.
This was more of a statement or a suggestion.
Yes, so the question was, can this be done remotely? What part happens remotely and what part happens locally? So on the client, you just run the import part of the script. On your domain, to get set up for that import, you run an export process with dejoin, and that produces the blob file that you then distribute to whatever client has to run the import process on.
So just to clarify, the computer name and stuff, you don't have to get the name of the computer that the guys drag out of the shop. Well, you don't even have to know that. You're actually just overriding whatever it's
done. Yeah, you're blatting a bunch of settings into it.
Let's just double check.
Sorry, the question was, do you have to get the name right when you leave the computer shop? And the answer is no. If you've got the blob, everything you need to know is contained within that blob. So yeah. The blob configures the client, and then the client hooks up to the domain for the rest of it.
Yeah, it's a good point, though. And for that reason, we've got our client here called Client 2, but the script we ran is creating a Client 3. So all I've done there is I've copied the blob onto this machine, and how I got it to there is up to you. Like Tristan said, FedEx, email, whatever makes you comfortable and your security team comfortable is fine. Same deal, I've actually got a pre-prepared script, and I'd actually suggest you do this for the CEO as well. So if you put this script into a CMD file and send him that as well, it's going to be a lot better than sitting on the end of the phone telling him type there, no, not there, here, there, that sort of thing.
The other slash.
Yeah.
No, the other slash. How many are there?
yeah, with both it makes it a bit tricky. All right, so I'm going to try and run that. I'll just put a pause at the end of this to make sure it actually works.
Moment, oh truth.
Need to elevate it. Fails without elevation. All right, so that says it's completed successfully, but we need a reboot for this to happen. So we'll reboot this now. It should only take a second, but it actually takes a little bit longer than normal to log in the first time, just while we're standing up the IPsec tunnel. And we're also going to bring group policy back as well. Like, we've got one group policy in there, but the domain might have 100 group policies, and we need all of those on that computer. Yeah.
Can you have a tunnel within a tunnel? Yes.
I actually don't know. I haven't sort of looked into it. But what I would say is that all we're doing is with direct access's tunnel is extending your corporate network outwards, so making the corporate network wherever you are by using that initial tunnel. We should be able to put anything at all inside that, just depending on how MTUs cope with it and that sort of thing. But yeah, as long as you can get, you know, the second tunnel, you've got a client on the computer that can establish that second tunnel and do that sort of thing for you, and it fits inside the encapsulated packet that we're sending through, then there shouldn't be a problem. But it's honestly not something we've covered yet in the early deployments.
Yeah, if you can get to it, it probably should work, but then your MTU is only so big and eventually you're going to choke on something somewhere. Yeah.
All right, so what you're seeing here is the client's taking a little bit longer than normal to log in. What we should see on the back end is, because we've got monitoring, the client is actually is logged in. We just don't have a username yet. You can see the computer account has been authenticated. I can double-click here and it'll show me that the computer's used machine Kerberos because it's a Windows 8 client. Shortly when I log in, I'll actually get some credentials in this screen. But what you can see is that the computer's using DNS, LDAP, Kerberos to drag down group policies and get the computer set up as if it was already joined to the domain and actually inside the environment. So I'll just log on just to prove that it's worked, but I'm pretty confident at this point as far as demos go.
You might need to use a domain account.
Good call. Should take that confidence down a level.
Thanks for wingmanning for me last night, Chad. Worked out real well, Chad.
All right, so what we should see here is that we've got Kerberos authentication for the user. The user can use Kerberos because we've got the tunnel established. What I should say is even in the Windows 7 deployment, you'll see the user come up as Kerberos because we can put the Kerberos over the tunnel once it's established, but in Windows 7, we still need the certificates for the initial connection. So if I refresh this, we have credentials, so the user is also logged in, and we're doing this interesting new thing that we do at the start of a Windows 8 deployment. This apparently is just it's not something I can click through. I just got to wait while it's setting things up, so we'll give it a couple of seconds.
Sorry, there were two questions simultaneously. I think everybody heard yours. Don't think so. Can you turn that screen off? Don't know. Haven't looked at it yet. It hasn't. You can?
Oh, excellent. That would be lovely.
Quick, let's do that. Sorry. Down. I mean, no. If you had to do it every day, I can understand that would be challenging. Yeah. Sorry, question from the front.
Could you use direct access to use your laptop to access multiple clients' networks and switch between them?
Excellent question, and no. So because it's a domain member thing, you've got one direct access buddy. Now, if it wasn't tied to being a domain member, sure, the technology is pretty generic. You could use it at a whole bunch of places all at once. But you're basically hijacking a client's domain contact into a particular network. So, yeah, it would be a really cool technology for a multi-site thing, but not yet.
Interestingly, the direct access client here hasn't told us that it's connected. It still says no internet access. It will come up. I'm pretty confident it'll work. And the reason I'm reasonably confident is that we've got the IP HTTPS interface up. You won't actually see that until direct access exchanges either certificates or does Kerberos authentication and gets to the NAT64 and DNS64 service. So if I try and ping an internal resource, app one, we get an IP6 response. So we're in the network, and I'll just show you that, even though the client's being a little bit slow here. See there, that was on its way. So we're in. The really cool thing about that is I never have to see the corporate environment. If I'm someone that the company has hired and there's no reason for me to come in from wherever I live in the middle of Australia to the corporate office in Sydney, we could just deploy a blob to that person and they'd be joined to the corporate network and also get managed out of that laptop as well once it's joined to the domain. Or once it's dejoined, I should say. And I'll just bring up the web server and then we'll flick back just to make sure that web's getting through as well.
Question for you on the diff cert. Does it compare to the markings, the outside of the tunnel? So if you have a link client on there, you're doing a voice and video call?
Sorry, I completely missed that.
So, to repeat the question, if you were using, for example, Link voice and video and you had QoS tags applied to it or DiffServ, is there a way for the router to see that and prioritize it appropriately if you're doing it in a tunnel?
I don't know. I was hoping because you repeated the question.
No,
you
knew. Yet again, Chad, thanks. So, that sounds great. Yeah, we'll give you a bottle of water. Quick, put something in it.
I've not covered that at all.
No, so I remember Link was an exception for some things. I'm not sure if direct access is one of them. There was some VPN limitation involved with Link and tunnels and things. I don't know what it was. I'm going to stop talking now.
Okay. All right. Sorry. All right, so we're in.
One moment.
Got another question?
Does the remote domain join work with Windows 7 or just Windows 8?
That's a very good question. I actually don't know. It won't take me long to figure it out. It's in the doc that I read about this. It definitely is covered. I just can't remember whether it is or isn't. Windows 7 definitely supports dejoin. It's just whether or not that dejoin client on Windows 7 will take the group policy out of the blob or not. I'm not 100% sure. But Stick around at the end if you don't mind, and I'll find out for you.
Okay.
All right, I'll jump out of the demo environment. We've seen the bulk of it in that we can access files, we can access web, we can see the client connected on the back end there. So we'll talk about it a little bit more.
So this is an example dejoin command line. It's creating a computer account for client one. It's saying, by the way, I want to include the direct access client settings policy and what gets forcibly pushed into that client afterwards, and saves it to cfilesprovision.txt. It's a pretty straightforward syntax. Just use it. It'll be good.
All right. Over I just you. Wanted to go over just two things slightly more. So we've looked at DA and we've shown that it works and that sort of thing. Just like to go over how it actually works. So the basics of it is that you've got as soon as you deploy DA, you deploy it with a group policy. Your laptops are always looking for a server called an NLS, a network location server. And as long as they can see that server, they know that they're connected to the corporate environment. And I probably sold that or said that wrong then. They're not always looking for it. They look for it whenever there's a change in their network. So you know whenever you get that pop-up that says, am I private, public, or corporate? When that sort of process is happening under the covers, the client's checking if the NLS server is available. If it is available, I'm on the corporate network, do nothing. If it's not available, I'm out on the internet and I need to stand up an IPsec tunnel and get through. So the first thing it does is it'll query for the external IPv4 record for DA. So it's even though it's an IP6 technology, the first thing we do is just query for the normal da.contoso.com record. When we find that, we do a quick probe to make sure that the box is available, and then we stand up the IPsec tunnel and validate the certificate on the client. Remember, even the Windows 8 client has a certificate on it or has a certificate associated with it, but it can be a self-signed and provisioned one by the Direct Access Wizard. Once that's happened, once we have an IPsec tunnel, we authenticate the computer, and then the only difference is going to be if it's Windows 8, we'll use Kerberos. If it's Windows 7, we'll use the certificates that you'll have to have deployed. All right, I might click through this one because
good idea.
It goes a bit all over the shop. This is how NAT 6.4 and DNS 6.4 works, and I've got to be really honest, this is much better to talk about with a couple of people and a whiteboard and we can scribble things out and do stuff like that. But we'll give it a go here. I think the high level how it works is not too bad. It's just if we get in a rat hole here, it could be awful. All right, so what you're looking at is you have a IP6 client over on this side, and then you've got some intranet resources over on the left, my left. The server that we're trying to get to there at the top is 172.16.20, and that's just a web server. And the only other thing I need is DNS. I need to know where to find that server using its name. So the IP6 client is using direct access in this case. On the diagram there, NAT 6.4 and DNS 6.4 isn't just a direct access technology. So the diagram is showing that you could actually set this up without direct access if you wanted to start testing IP6 in your organization. You can have different networks and NAT 6.4 and DNS 6.4 them. But in this case, we're talking DA. So the client is going to send a quad A query for the DNS name of the web server. Quad A query is your IPv6 query, IPv6 record, and quad A is just a normal name record. So we ask for that. The DNS 6.4 service will query the DNS server on our behalf inside the network, and the DNS server is going to say, I can't help you there. I don't have Quad A records. We're an IPv4 only network. This is where the cool part of NAT 6.4 and DNS 6.4 kicks in. Instead of telling the client that that record doesn't exist, it tells it a fib. It appends the IPv4 A record to a prefix that's defined by the DNS 6.4 record. So you've now got an IP6 address that it's made up and stored in memory, and it's going to send that address back to the client. And you can probably guess what's going to happen. The client is going to go, cool, I've got that, I can get to the server I want, and it's going to use that address in the destination address in the packet that it's forming. So it's forming an IP6 packet, so it needs an IPv6 destination, and we're using the destination, or the destination we have, is the one that we're given by the DNS 6.4 and NAT 6.4 service. So this is the DNS server replying with the IPv4 address. This is the address we're making up in memory. You can see there's that prefix of FD, FE, FE, and then we append the IPv4 address at the end there. send that back to the client. Client will use that as the destination address, and it'll be able to talk to the web server. And the way it can talk to the web server is using the NAT64. So DNS64 is all about tricking the client through name resolution, and then NAT64 is about taking an IPv4 address that's come in, or sorry, an IP6 address, and transferring that using IPv4, and then when it comes back, doing the opposite back out to the client. So just two components that work well together to trick the clients into thinking that the network they're talking to is completely IPv6 capable. And this is how we get around it in Server 2012. In Server 2008, this wasn't built into the product, and that's where the big sort of showstopper was. You needed to find out a way to do this yourself. And we're able to do web stuff. I think with NAT64, DNS64, it definitely is something that once you go over a few times on a whiteboard, it's not too bad. So if that's, you know, not comfortable with it, come down and have a chat later, because I think it's something we can get explained pretty well.
All right. Cool. So we'll cover Windows 7 client considerations and multi-site deployment. What's that? Oh, sorry, anyway. Please, continue. Windows 7 client. Not much has changed for the Windows 7 client. You still need certificates because it doesn't understand the new Kerberos web-based proxy. And the original IPHTTPS client isn't as good as the Windows 8 IPHTTPS client. It doesn't have a built-in connection status UE, so if you do implement direct access for Windows 7 computers, you're probably going to need to download the Direct Access Connectivity Assistant, a solution accelerator that we provide that gives you a minimal user interface, a like brandable little thing, and some troubleshooting information out of it as well. And the troubleshooting information that you get is a little bit limited by comparison with the Windows 8 stuff.
Yeah, it's all NetSH based rather than PowerShell.
Long list of NetSH.
Yeah. We were going to just really quickly show you what you would need to do on the server side. Mm. So there's not much to this because direct access doesn't need much done to it. What you need to have is deploy to PKI. So I'll just bring up the DA box. I'll minimize this stuff so it doesn't look as confusing, doesn't look as busy on the screen. All I need to do is come into the option 2 here in the configuration setting, choose edit, skip through the first bit that's still the same, still the external address. All of this stuff's still fine, these are just the interfaces. But I come down here and I've got this tick box to enable Windows 7 computers to connect to the enterprise. What I have to supply once I do that is this use computer certificates part. So that's where I'll need to come in and choose a certificate that's been issued by my PKI. So on the direct access side, there's really not that much to that. It's just that you need to have a PKI established and set up and built before you can do the Windows 7 stuff in your enterprise if you need to be able to do it. But making the change between Windows 8 and Windows 7, not a big deal.
And the wizard then does its usual thing with certificates, which is extract whatever certificate you pointed it at and put it into the group policy so that anybody receiving that policy will trust it. Right, so multi-site is now possible. It's not possible with the IPHTTPS listener alone, so your deployment becomes a little bit more complex when you go multi-site. Sorry, did somebody say something? Is that me? Okay, good. The most relevant connection is found by probing, so the idea is that you connect through the best available or closest available location or point of contact, and manual failover is available in the Windows 8 client. So if you look at the connection properties of any given direct access connection in the Windows 8 box, you'll see a little area for multi-site, and you can pick one from a list if your administrator's pre-populated it. We don't have a demo for that today. And this just runs through some of the monitoring options that we've already looked at. So this shows us the list of services that are involved with direct access, and that the remote access console lets you know if they're healthy or not. And the client status, number of clients, how much they're doing. Yep, looked at that before. Ports. So ports they're using, IP addresses.
Yep. And this will give you a clue also whether you're Windows 7 or Windows 8, because obviously Windows 7 can't use machine Kerberos, only uses certificates. So you'll notice that in the console as well. All right, we're nearly there. So the only thing we need to talk about now is just we've done a couple of deployments on RC, and obviously I've tried it out behind the home NAT router, and it works just fine. There's a couple of things I just wanted to bring up because they're the things that tend to slow the deployments down. So the first one that really gets in the way is that you need an external DNS record. which isn't a big deal, but if you've given yourself half a day to set up direct access, you need to remember that you need to organise this in advance so that all the clients out on the internet know where that record is and it replicates around, does whatever it does. The other thing is, if you don't own the zone or you have a third-party provider, you know, hooking it up for you, it may be that they have to go through a change control and that type of thing. And we found that that holds up the deployment a little bit. It can be a couple of days. The next thing is, in the perimeter network, especially if you outsource this role, a lot of people pay someone to look after their perimeter network. I work in Canberra, and a lot of the government customers outsource their perimeter network to like a secure provider. So any change to that network needs a fair bit of change control and authorisation and that type of thing. On that network, you're going to need to have either forwarding or NATing back into your corporate network. And it can be back to another firewall, that's fine. But you're going to need to make sure, the golden rule is that the IP HTTPS packets arrive untouched when they get to your DA box. You can't have anything jumping in and figuring out what's in them and trying to put them back together. They need to be unmodified.
So for TMG people, that's straight server publishing, not web server publishing.
The other thing that we've found out that makes it a lot better to deploy direct access, if you're seriously thinking about giving this a go, always use a Windows 8 client first. And that's even if you're not going to use Windows 8 in your enterprise. Just build one so that you've got it to test with. And what that'll give you is it'll give you all the good troubleshooting tools and the UI, and it just means you can test that the tunnel end-to-end is set up before you start messing about with certificates and, well, certificates is the worst, and then redundancy, load balancing. You can do NLB very easy with direct access, but you don't want to mess around with it until you prove that tunnel's up and running. And the best way to do it is simple deployment, Windows 8, then throw the Windows 8 client out if you're not ready for Windows 8, but use it just to test. I showed the checkbox already. I call that privately the checkbox of doom, because if you tick that, you've deployed direct access to your whole enterprise, even if you're just testing it out, because all it's going to do is apply a group policy that says I apply to all computers and then filter it on whether they're a laptop using WMI. So you take that tick box out and apply a security group instead, and then you can limit it down to the 10 clients you're testing with before you're ready to scale it out. The last one I wanted to mention, both of these have come up in real-world deployments. The first one is antivirus can and will mess with this, especially if it's got the network inspection components. So a lot of antivirus now can check things on the wire. We found the one we were using, and I won't mention the brand, but it was fiddling with the packets on the wire, and we found the direct access tunnel would stand up. We'd get IP HTTPS, but then everything else failed. Once we turned off antivirus, or actually turning off wasn't enough, once we removed antivirus and removed the filter driver that was there, direct access worked fine. So that's something that they'll need to work with the vendor on to figure out what's going on there. The other one is network card teaming. That also broke it for us. So then that's on the Hyper-V host that we were using. We had a Hyper-V server set up with third-party network card teaming, and we found direct access wouldn't work at all. So the first thing we did is disable the team. Direct access worked straight away. But just one of those things that was, you know, real sort of head-scratcher at the time. Does direct access in general? I haven't tested it with Forefront. I imagine the only reason I'm guessing that it would, again, I've got nothing to do with sales, but I'm guessing it would because I don't think we do network inspection with the Forefront client,
yeah,
but
we
I
do.
Could be wrong. We do?
We do.
So it probably doesn't work.
Then again, it's the sort of thing where we've got a vested interest in getting it right.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work now, oh, can I make promises for the product team?
Yeah.
Can I do that? Are we in public?
Oh, okay.
I'd imagine it's something that they're looking at if it doesn't work, and I'd be surprised if it didn't straight out.
Yeah.
It works on my machine.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so the second one's really easy to answer. It supports NLB. Sorry. The second question I'm really keen on, so I'll repeat that first, which was, can you cluster it? You don't cluster it. Well, you use NLB to do it. So the Direct Access Server Console includes a wizard that'll just run through setting up NLB. You set up the first one, then the second one, it'll actually build it and do all the NLB for you. The first question I actually forgot, I'm sorry.
The first question was, how many clients can you put through a Direct Access server?
Okay, and we don't have awesome numbers on that yet, but there was a figure you found, wasn't there?
No, I didn't. Thanks again, Chad.
No worries. It was going so well. Sorry. Hi. Oh, good one. Yeah, I missed that point. Professional doesn't have the bits in it for direct access. The client doesn't work on we know.
I thought of that. The question was, how does the CEO buy a laptop preloaded with Windows 8 Enterprise? And I thought of that just as we were midway through the demo. So thank you for highlighting that. Like, but our scenario, it relies on him with Black Amex and, oh well.
Yeah.
So yeah, you do need an enterprise client, a volume licensed client, so you're probably going to have to, you know, talk
That's
to your
really
competitor who's got a remote office and get one from them. Join it to your domain. That's completely safe.
Yeah.
One more question.
No, the DC's fine on whatever you've got. Yep. Yep.
Can you use external load balancers instead of an LB? Something like
F5 or... Okay. So the question was, can you use external load balancing? You can in the existing product. The two deployments that I've been involved with neither have had external load balancers, but it is in our doco as a supported solution. I just don't have any experience with it yet. But I imagine as long as the external vendors are up to date with the changes to IP HTTPS, that will be fine.
As long as it's straight port forwarding should be good. We'll do the summary, and then everybody who wants to leave can leave, and people who want to do questions can do questions. So all of the original deployment blockers are gone. I'm here. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I did that. You don't need native IPv6 deployed within your intranet anymore. It's quite happy to work with NAT64 and tunnel 2v4 servers. DA now works behind NAT devices. It doesn't have to be right on the edge of your network, which should make some firewall admins a bit more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Very simple to set up and monitor. Has new user interface, remote access client console. And even if you haven't deployed Windows 8, use it first.
Just for testing.
You can win a Sculpt Touch mouse as well by doing things. Please do whatever's on the slide at this point. We didn't write that one, etc. So if you have got questions, please come down and have a chat with us or do an open forum in the meantime.
Thanks. Yay.
Thanks. Questions are going to be hard to spot, so if you could congeal here, that would be good. Yeah, I agree. That was...